from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In this Forum segment, we turn our attention to air travel. In recent news, budget cuts went into effect yesterday, furloughing air traffic controllers and causing delays, and American Airlines and U.S. Airways may be merging. They would become the world's biggest airline. Plus, the Transportation Security Administration has delayed the decision to allow small folding knives, pool cues, hockey and lacrosse sticks, golf clubs, and utility-sized bats to be taken on board planes by passengers. That was a decision which was supposed to go into effect on Thursday. Joining us to talk about all this and more is Hugo Martin. He's a business reporter with the Los Angeles Times who covers airlines and the travel industry. And welcome to the program, Hugo Martin.
Hi, Michael. Nice to be here.
Glad to have you here. And glad to have Bob Mann with us as well, who's an airline consultant with R.W. Mann and Company and also joins us by phone. Welcome, Bob Mann.
Thank you, Michael. Hello, Hugo.
Hi. How you doing, Bob?
Good, thanks.
Good. Glad to have you both, and glad for the amicability between the two of you. I thought maybe we'd begin, if I could, by talking to you, Hugo Martin, because you've been following the furloughs. There are about 1,500 of them, and first day was yesterday. You had pointed out, I think, earlier that there wasn't much of a significant change in airline operations during the spring break. But now, what are we seeing?
Yeah, now we're seeing a little bit more of an impact. The furloughs actually took effect Sunday, and when we looked at statistics on on-time performance, it didn't really change a whole lot across the country. There were some delays at places like New York and Florida and briefly at Los Angeles. But on Monday, yesterday, the first business day, which has a little more heavier traffic, the on-time performance did drop a little more. About 10%, I'm showing. So the impact did start to be felt as air traffic controllers found they had, a lot of traffic to deal with, and their response was basically to keep planes on the ground until they sorted through all the congestion.
Now, this is all due to the, we should mention, the sequester.
Right.
And there are, what, about 10% perhaps any day of air traffic controllers not on the job?
Right. The FAA was basically ordered to cut a little over $600 million from their budget, and they decided that what they would do is they would furlough air traffic controllers and others as well, technicians as well, 1 day out of every two-week pay period. So that amounted basically to about a 10% cut in staffing on any given day.
So what do you foresee for the summer when travel will be at its highest?
I think we're going to see the same sort of thing, especially at the big airports and busy flying times. In the morning, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of problems, but the traffic gets heavier as we move on into the day, and heavy traffic days such as Mondays and Fridays, we're going to see a lot more delays unless the Congress and the White House work something out and maybe put an end to this.
Well, since you mentioned the White House, you know, the FAA is estimating about a third of travelers will face delays as a result of these furloughs. But there are also those who are saying this is just a pawn in the budget debate. The administration's using it to show how the sequester is going to affect people's lives. What do you think about that political analysis?
I think the whole issue has become politically charged, and it's gotten to the point where the passengers are stuck in the middle. We interviewed a couple of passengers who got on planes and were told, this flight is being delayed due to sequester. And then they were told by their pilots, you know, if you're upset about this, go to this website. And there's been a website created by a trade group for the airlines. And the website is basically a petition telling the FAA, you know, to rethink these cuts. So it's pretty frustrating if you're a traveler and you just want to, you know, do business or visit loved ones because you're caught in the middle and there's not a whole lot you can do.
Hugo Martin with us from Los Angeles is a business reporter for the LA Times and covers airlines and the travel industry. Bob Mann is an airline consultant with R.W. Mann and Company. And Bob, I wanted to ask you about not only the status of this possible merger and how it could affect air travel, and we're talking about what could be the biggest airline in the world if this goes through, and I'm talking about specifically American Airlines merging with U.S. Airways, potential to be the world's biggest airlines, and it could affect cost, flights, all kinds of things, couldn't it?
Well, it'll affect certainly the outcome of both of those carriers and how they move forward in the industry, but it'll also have, I think, less of an effect that some people might conclude in that this consolidation is really an end-to-end combination of networks, which are very complementary, and as a result, should result in both the maintenance of existing networks, but also to make them more robust and more profitable.
I'm reading, that it would affect upgrades and frequent flyer and have impact on all those things.
Well, there's no doubt that you're going to have a lot more AAdvantage members by the time the day is through. You'll have the combination of frequent flyer programs. You'll have, of course, everyone at a single airline looking for whatever empty seats are still available, and not many these days. So there'll be some effects like that, but by and large, it's going to be a consolidating effect that I think is beneficial.
And at this point, it needs approval of the Justice Department antitrust regulators as well as shareholders of U.S. Airways, right?
It will need shareholder approval. It will need, of course, the plan of reorganization needs bankruptcy court approval. Department of Justice will weigh in. The EU will weigh in because both carriers have large amounts of service across the North Atlantic to Europe.
And I also mentioned in my promotion of this segment that I wanted to talk, with both of you about the TSA delay, the Transportation Security Administration delay of small folding knives. There are about a couple hundred of them that are collected each day right now. They were going to go ahead at one point on Thursday with allowing them to go on planes with passengers, along with pool cues and all these other things I mentioned, lacrosse sticks, golf clubs. Lawmakers have decided lawmakers have put the influence on the TSA to hold this up. But there's also been a lot of blowback from families, from flight attendants and the like. What is the status of this now, as you see it, Hugo Martin?
Well, as of now, the change is not going to happen. John Pistola, the head of TSA, has decided to temporarily postpone this move. And he had originally said that he wanted his screeners to focus on bigger threats than these small knives. He wanted them to focus on explosives. And
that was the justification for it.
That was the justification. Also to bring the U.S. in line with a lot of European security standards. In Europe, you can fly with these small folding knives, and it got to be a bit of a hassle if you flew from Europe to the U.S. and you found that you had to take your folding knife out and have it taken away. But John Pistoli said was, we want to focus on explosives, and I want my people working on that, not, having to take away small knives. So he said as of the 25th, they were going to allow these small knives, and along with the golf clubs and the hockey sticks and these other things, that they were going to take off the banned list. At the last minute, he had a meeting with a security panel, an advisory panel that he has, and after that meeting, he decided to temporarily postpone changing the rules. Now, whether he will go back and implement this anyways in the future, we're not clear. He hasn't really elaborated on the next step.
Well, it is just a temporary delay, Bob Mann. So what do you think we can expect from this, particularly when you've got about 73% of Americans saying they don't want knives on board, although I should add that 90% of Americans wanted background checks. But let me get your take on this.
Well, I guess I kind of feel defenseless since I haven't been able to use my my small Victorinox penknife keychain since 2001. But on the other hand, I've learned to live with it, and it doesn't seem to be a real necessity to allow any of those items. Frankly, I mean, I'm not sure which is the worst example. I think the baseball bats may be the best example.
Utility bats.
Utility bats. Well, okay, there we go. And I don't know what size lacrosse stick would fit in an overhead compartment. I mean, I play hockey, and those sticks are 5.5 feet long.
I don't think you could put one above there, but here's a listener. Let me get your response to this, Bob. This is Dennis, who writes, the controversy over TSA carry-on restrictions is silly, considering that first-class passengers are handed knives in conjunction with the mail service. At least they were the last time I bumped into first-class by default.
Sure. Well, I mean, these are good points. And I think the real issue is the attempt to harmonize across various jurisdictions is a good intent. On the other hand, maybe the harmonization needs to go in the other direction, where the European Union doesn't permit the use of small knives in the cabin.
Well, let me take this opportunity to ask listeners their opinions. And in fact, you can join us, and we invite you to do so with any thoughts you have about the furlough delays, about the Transportation Security Administration measures, which will not be going into effect, but the key word here is temporary, and about this major potential merger that is up for a possibility with a bankruptcy court between American Airlines and U.S. Airways, or just any questions you might have related to air travel in general. We welcome your participation, and you can participate a number of ways. You can call us now at our toll-free number, which is 866-733-6786, and join the program that way. Toll-free again, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org. Post any questions or comments you have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page or tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQED Forum. And here's Keith, who writes in an email, "These cutbacks in air traffic controllers are nothing more than political theater by the government. They have nothing to do with sequester. There are tens of thousands of less critical government jobs that could be cut without the public being affected." And again, you may want to weigh in on this with your opinion. We're going to go to your calls and emails and the like forthwith here. But I want to also get some wisdom from Bob Mann and Hugo Martin on, just air traveling, particularly in light of the likelihood of delays and the furloughs affecting more delays. In a sense, I think, first of all, it would be good, I suppose, on the right away to say, don't you think, Bob Mann, that people ought to be commiserative with airline employees? They're under a lot of stress, too, due to these flight delays.
Well, I think the entire industry is under a tremendous amount of stress, not the least of which is when flights are canceled or delayed, connections are broken. There are no empty seats on later flights in the day, for example, to get people to their destinations the same day they wish to travel. But I think the other context is, look, if you go back to 2005, 2006, the sort of delays that we've experienced recently due to sequester are a fraction of what was experienced daily during 2005, 2006. We've actually managed to mitigate delays to a large degree. And when they crop up, either due to weather or due to sequester in this case, they're suddenly a headline item. So I think they have to be put in perspective.
Well, when they do crop up, and if they do get worse as these furloughs persist, I'm just wondering, Hugo Martin, what your recommendation is for passengers other than keep their cool and all that. I mean, there are people, for example, suggesting that you can find out more on Twitter. You can go to an international airline service like the Japanese and get more information. What about all that?
I don't know that there's a whole lot you could do in regards to these particular delays, because they're going to happen when air traffic gets heavy and the controllers just don't have the manpower to sort through it all. The one thing you're just going to have to know is if you're traveling on a busy travel day, such as a Friday, for example, a weekend getaway day, you might just prepare. Just know that your flight, there's a chance that your flight's going to be delayed up to an hour, maybe more.
Yeah, I think that's excellent advice. It's also probably useful to know that you can complain via the U.S. Travel Association if you need to. Let me go to some callers here, and let's begin, Sean, with you. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was actually one of those travelers on Monday traveling from Southern California to San Francisco, and was told that, my flight was delayed for an hour and 45 minutes exactly because of the sequester, and to go to the, website and complain. The odd thing to me was I actually tracked the flight back through where it was coming from, and the crew had shown up 15 minutes late, two segments before. And so I sort of wonder in the back of my mind is if the sequester is going to be a convenient excuse for, on-time performance in general with the various airlines.
Yeah, an excellent question. And Bob Mann, let's get your take.
Well, actually, I can recall being on an airplane with a former FAA administrator as a passenger, who when announced that this flight was being delayed due to air traffic control reasons, she picked up her cell phone, called the FAA control center in Herndon, Virginia, and determined that the flight was being delayed for company reasons, not ATC. So it is an easy out. On the other hand, look, I suspect that, when you combine weather effects and when you combine reduced number of controllers, there are 15,000 controllers, 1,500 of them would be on furlough any given day. There's clearly going to be an effect. And then the key issue is to manage that effect so you don't have airborne holding, which is just the most expensive and most disruptive, but rather keep the aircraft on the ground where they're less expensive to manage.
I know. It would seem to me that if you've got 1,500 furloughed, which is, again, as I say, 10% any day, it's got to affect flight.
Well, it does. But the question is, does it affect it any more than bad weather in the central part of the country? You know, when you have a storm system moving across the Ohio Valley, essentially everything from New York to L.A. gets delayed.
Let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Andrew. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on. It was a great discussion. It's quite controversial. Just wanted to make a quick comment. Both of my parents work for the airlines, flight attendant and pilot, and they seem to think that, you know, it's good to prevent a lot of these, you know, hazardous, quote, materials get out on the airplane. But at the same time, I feel like, you know, passengers have never been so cautious and careful than we've been in the last decade. Pilots have firearms. I feel it could be difficult to take down a plane or commit an act of terror with a 2-inch pocket knife or a lacrosse stick or a hockey stick. I feel like it might be overkill.
How'd you weigh in on that, Hugo Martin?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, and that's something that John Pistoli has pointed out, with the security that we've added since 9/11, these small knives are not the threat that they were, you know, pre 9/11. However, I spoke to a former pilot who made the point that, yeah, you know, the pilot is safe, but what about the passengers and the flight attendants? You know, someone could try to take one of them, threaten them as a way to force the pilot to open the metal doors. And his point was, why don't we just keep it as it is? It's worked fine up until now, and it's only making a lot of people upset. And that's a good point as well.
Well, the most upset people were the flight attendants, really. Although, I mean, there were survivors, families of 9/11, and as I said earlier,
right,
legislators. But there was a lot of blowback from flight attendants.
Flight attendants are vehement about this. They're not going to let this go down. They've been, they were the key people behind this website and this petition, and they were present in that meeting with Pistole on Monday that basically prompted him to hold off on this change.
Let me thank Andrew for his call and go right to another caller, and that's you, George. Good morning.
Good morning. We got to keep these security laws in place because of all the countries that we invaded, the toppled numerous amounts, and that's why they're getting back at us. So our situation is quite different from what it is in Europe.
Well, I think that's a fair point, and I thank you for it. And let's hear from another listener. Charles, that's you. Good morning.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, and because it's not said enough, to remind everybody that a lot, if not most, of the security screening and stuff that we see in the airports is all just theater anyway. This valley, I'm calling from San Mateo, is full of engineers who, given the problem, get some catastrophe-creating device on board an aircraft. They could do that. And the reason that they don't do it has a lot more to do with everything outside of the airport.
What do you mean, everything outside the airport?
I mean everything from the fact that there's FBI looking for people with motivations. There's people who simply don't want to blow up airplanes. And the fact that your typical terrorist is not a very highly trained, very disciplined, technically able person who's actually being able to think outside of the use of, for example, explosives and things like that. But just over lunch, you can get a bunch of the top quality engineers out here who'd say, oh, yeah, you know, cause some horrible, horrible thing that could irrecoverable damage to an aircraft in flight. Sure, we can do that on a napkin.
Mm-hmm. All right. I thank you for that call. Jim writes, why don't they just collect knives at the beginning of a flight and give them back at the end? Another listener writes, golf clubs? What's up with golf clubs? Does that include clubs checked as baggage? I have a golf vacation coming up. You can't necessarily take those clubs on board. Not yet. Nora writes, perhaps we need to have members of Congress themselves impacted as they fly to and from D.C. before this issue is seriously addressed. And let me go to another one of your calls. And we go to Tisha. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. My question is, airport is anything like a business where government is collecting taxes to provide services. So if there is a short of money to staff air traffic controllers, shouldn't the airlines and the passengers pitch in more money to make the staff and avoid delays rather than depending on the government for staffing air traffic controllers?
Well, there's a unique idea. Go around with a tin cup for the air traffic controllers. Any thoughts from either of our guests on that?
I think the pilots and the flight attendants would probably want first dibs on the cup. But
Well, it's we're talking about some major cuts, though. I mean, whether you think this is political machinations or not, $1 billion has been cut from the Department of Transportation, and $637 million have been cut this year from the FAA. And so we're talking about substantial amount of revenue here, Robert.
Well, this is a problem by design. The simple word sequester means essentially indiscriminate. I mean, this could have been done in a very surgical manner by design. Instead, it was done as blunt trauma, and that's the problem. And you can blame who you wish for that, but whether it's obstructionists or whether it's those who hold out for the other point of view, but this is a problem by design. You get what you design.
If I could add, the critics of the FAA are saying the same thing. They're saying, look, there were ways around this. They could have cut this from other parts of their budget, but the FAA is saying 70%, something like 70% of our budget is staffing. It is people, and we can only cut so much from the other 30% of our budget. And they claim that they've looked at every alternative. Cut $600 million from their budget, and it's got to come down to putting some people on furlough.
It's also a splendid example of how each party blames the other. I mean, mm-hmm. What you hear from the Democrats is the Republicans allowed these sequester budget cuts to take place, and from the Republicans, you hear that Obama was responsible for the whole suggestion in the first place, and so it goes back and forth. And not much is resolved on that square. Let me get another call in here, and that's Shantunu. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you.
I was wondering, in this day and age where robots are doing a lot of things that humans have done in the past, taking care of old people or autonomous vehicles, how far we are from a day and age where robots manage our air traffic control?
We have any futuristic prescience on that question from you, Bob?
I don't know about I don't know about air traffic control. I know that the airline industry has pushed what they call, I think, next generation security, where a lot of what we see TSA doing will be done by machines. They'll be able to X-ray you and your shoes and without you having to take off your jacket and your belt and all these other things, a bomb sniffing technology that you just need to walk through. That's a lot of the advances that the airlines and airport executives have been talking about, hoping to see at airports, in the next 5 to 10 years.
I'd like to read a couple more emails here. And by the way, that's Bob Mann, who is airline consultant for R.W. Mann & Company. Hugo Martinez also with us, who is a business reporter for the L.A. Times and covers airlines and the travel industry, which we're covering here with you in this edition of Forum. Susan asks, why not schedule fewer flights? Seems to me the fewer employees should mean fewer flights. Wouldn't we be a lot safer?
And I'm sorry, Bob. The airlines have cut back quite a bit since the recession, and that's one of the reasons why they're starting to see their revenue pick up. There's been quite a lot of routes cut back, and also with the mergers that you talked about, American and U.S. Airways, but we had Delta and Continental, and Southwest is taking over AirTran. So there have been fewer flights, and some people say that might be the reason why airlines are flying on time a lot more now, because they have sort of a little more cushion in between flights. There are fewer flights, and that's not really going to solve the problem. I think the problem happens when everybody wants to fly on those particular times of day. You know, when you want to get there, everybody wants to get there at the same time, and that's when you know, congestion gets heavy, and the air traffic controllers are just going to have to keep some planes on the ground to make it all work.
Apropos of that, I'm looking at a comment on our website from Sean who says, why should there be significant delays at peak times? If this were not political or terrible management, they would keep the original staffing levels at peak times and only furlough during less busy times. At worst, you have minor delays at all times. And another listener, actually a professor of economics named Tony, weighs in here and says, nothing in the sequester requires laying off air traffic controllers. Just as the administration closed White House to tours, they're using the sequester as an excuse to inflict maximum pain on the American public. Do people not understand this, or are they simply swallowing the media narrative?
Right. Well, we could cut $1 billion out of the next-gen budget, for example, and that's something the airline industry wants, so therefore they would prefer that billion not be cut. I mean, there are lots of ways this could have been done surgically, but the manner in which the sequester was negotiated pretty much gets you what you get here. It doesn't matter whether it's the Ingalls Shipyard in Mississippi or whether it's air traffic controllers.
So what I'm hearing from both of you as we come to the end of the segment is, yes, there will be delays, but maybe not necessarily as bad as it was a few years ago, and travelers can take some stock in that and confidence in that?
I think so, and I think the other important thing to note is, although we have about 1 million flights per year fewer than we did in, say, 2008-2009, Hugo pointed out earlier that these remaining flights are going to the big cities where people want to go, and therefore they're creating pretty much the same sort of congestion patterns and daytime utilization patterns as before. The flights that were cut were the flights to the tertiary cities on the networks.
Yeah, well, the delays earlier, yeah, I mean, yesterday, the first day of delays were about 1 to 3 hours, mainly in the bigger cities back east. But they are predicting, the FAA is saying, look out here in the west, look out San Diego, look out San Francisco and Los Angeles. Let me extend appreciation, though, to our two experts, Hugo Martin, again, business reporter with the L.A. Times, who covers airlines and the travel industry for the L.A. Times. Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you, Bob Mann, airline consultant for R.W. Mann and Company. And thank you, our listeners. We wouldn't be here without you. We are here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Gucci. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer is Raul Ramirez. Another hour up ahead with famed novelist Isabel Allende. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.